Former NFL receiver Anthony Armstrong joins me on today's Locked On Giants podcast to give us an early look of the Washington Commanders who face the Giants this weekend at MetLife Stadium. That's coming up next.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina, and happy to have you with us on this Wednesday. We have a special guest on the program. We're going to get an early first look at the Washington Commanders, and who better to provide that first look for us than former NFL receiver who actually played for the Commanders back in the day, even though he looks like he's still a player these days. Anthony Armstrong, former NFL receiver.
Patricia.
How are you? He is now the host of the Believe in Commanders podcast. So Anthony knows all things Washington Commanders. We're going to pick his brain, try and get a little intel out there. So Anthony, thank you so much.
I'll tell you what I can.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Always good to see you. And as I was saying to Anthony offline, I remember him from when he was a player.
Y'all make
shifty little receiver there. He used to do his things. If you didn't keep an eye on him, he could burn you a few times. So
that
yes,
is the truth.
I remember. So Anthony, let's jump right in. Got a lot of questions here about the Commanders. And I want to start off, if I could, about a big picture. There's been some obvious distraction around the Commanders, you know, rumors about a potential sale, you know, misconduct, all kinds of stuff. And having been a player, Anthony, I got to imagine as much as you try to shut that stuff out, it makes its way down to the locker room because you hear things. How do you think the Commanders of today have been kind of dealing with that to kind of, you know, keep the focus on what it needs to be and just locking all that stuff out? Or have you seen an effect on all this, you know, off-field stuff?
You know, I think that winning cures all. That's what I say all the time on my show. That's what, you know, I tell everybody. I'm like, just put some wins together. You know, being a former player, yes, you hear about some initial headlines and grumblings about sales and things of that nature. But at the end of the day, that has nothing to do with you. They're not going to go down there and ask Taylor Heinicke who should be the next owner. They're not going to ask Terry McLaurin. They may, but they probably won't ask them their opinions on it. It's going to go into somebody else. And then, you know, the workplace, that culture type thing. Once again, you try to focus on one, not repeating that type of behavior, but two, you just focus on doing your job and being the best you can be on the field. And as you can see, with more wins going on over there in Washington right now, there's been a little bit less negativity and distractions coming on from the sidelines and, you know, from outside of the building. So just getting back to the basics and focusing on what you do, what you're paid to do. That's the way you get past all those distractions.
And you mentioned winning cures all. Washington has won 6 of their last 7 games after a slow start. What clicked for them? How have they been able to turn it around?
You know, I think it's a couple of things. Number one, you can obviously point to the quarterback position. Are you going to say Heinicke's better than Carson Wentz? That's for a whole other conversation. But what I think Taylor Heinicke brings to this team is, number one, he brings some calm, even though it is a little bit stressful watching him play sometimes. He brings calm because he knows the offense. And with him being able to know the offense, he can disperse the ball where it needs to go. Generally, he makes really good decisions with the football. Obviously, he's put into some bad situations here and there. But the way that the offense has exploded with him at quarterback. I mean, Terry McLaurin's targets are up. You see a lot more running the ball. Now, you may wonder about the quarterback, but bringing Brian Robinson in, getting him healthy, that's been a big part of it as well. So the health and Taylor Heinicke combined has really helped this team peak at this point. I don't want to say peak. I think they still have some room to grow because you still have Chase Young to show up that can help affect this defense. But all in all, you have a lot of the pieces coming together at the right time, and they're getting into a good recipe, a good rhythm of an offensive identity that I feel like this is what Scott Turner and Ron Rivera wanted at the beginning of the season. It just took 6 weeks to get there.
Right. Now, you mentioned, you know, the turnaround. The Commanders had that huge, huge win over the Eagles, who right now I think we can all agree is the cream of the crop at the NFC East, given their record. What do you think, you know, first off, let's talk about what Washington did to besides obviously scoring more points and playing better. What was it about that game, their approach, that just kind of, you know, propelled them to victory? And how has that carried through to against wins against Houston and then most recently Atlanta?
You know, I think Washington looked at the tape of seeing what Houston was able to do against Philly and being able to run the ball and challenge that team. And then Washington went in there and did the exact same thing. They committed to the run. I think they ran the ball like 40 or almost 50 times. It was a lower average, like just under 4 yards per average per carry. But the commitment to the run was what did Philly in. I mean, I like Philly. I like what they do. I just feel like they don't really have anything else that they're going to add. They just a really good team. They're playing lights out. If you can find a way to stop something from them, as you could see what Washington was able to do, then they are susceptible to a loss. But Washington has really committed to the run, and I feel like against Atlanta they got a little bit too pass happy. In my opinion, they should have handed that ball off to Brian Robinson a lot more, made that game a little bit too close. But I think making a commitment to the run, focusing on that running game, has been the biggest part about this turnaround and helping them keep things rolling as of late.
And speaking of that running game, the last four games, 137 yards, 152, 153, 176. What has clicked for them in the running game?
It's really getting Brian Robinson back in there. He was the guy who was going to be that sledgehammer. He was going to be the lead dog. And obviously he got shot earlier in the year that put him out. He wasn't able to participate. And he recently getting back, and they slowly worked him into the fold, and they've kind of transitioned the type of carries that Antonio Gibson was getting. Antonio was carrying everything inside, outside. But now with Brian Robinson back there, you can say, hey, you handle the inside the tackle work. He can move the ball from a 3 yard carry to a 4 or 5 yard carry. He runs over DBs to put the ball in the end zone, shows good hands, has a lot of versatility. And then that gives Antonio Gibson the chance to be worked and utilized in different positions. So with Robinson coming in, it allows that offense to kind of morph a little bit. Let's say it kind of can transform and add just more weapons. It's truly addition. The addition of Brian Robinson that I feel has taken this thing over, because I mean the offensive line's been hurt, kind of banged up, and a little patchwork here and there, but they've looked great over the past few weeks.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, Ash, about the offensive line and how a running game can help it. Because usually, you know, we think, well, the offensive line has to help the running back by obviously opening up the holes, but running backs can also help, as can receivers. So can you just talk about, you know, what you've seen from the offensive line as well as the downfield blocking from the receivers and helping that Washington running game get off at the ground?
No, absolutely. You know, the receivers, I would have coaches, Kyle Shanahan would definitely be one. They would say you have to block if you want to play in this offense. You're going to have to put your hands on the DB. You got to get physical here and there. Because if you're not doing that, then teams are not going to respect your running game. They're not going to respect any play action passes that go on. So if you have a really good running game, I mean, you know, the Giants know this. You have Saquon Barkley back there. He has more rushing yards than a lot of NFL teams right now. You get an extra person in the box who gets a little nosy. And in that instance, you have to either identify him across the offensive line, put him into the count, or sometimes you see them bring those receivers in. And it makes receivers do some dirty work here and there. But it's kind of like in basketball. If you have the willingness to do the dirty work on the front end, they will reward you on the back end. So Darius Slayton is a perfect example. He's y'all's deep threat. You play action passes, throw the ball down to him. Same thing can happen with Terry McLaurin. It can happen with, Jahan Dotson, Curtis Samuel. All those guys really get the benefit from the running game. And then you mentioned the offensive line. A good running back, he's going to have some patience. He's going to be able to set up those blocks and make it easy on his offensive line to really roll up on those defensive linemen and try to climb to that next level.
The Commanders, for as long as I can remember, I guess going back to the days of Kirk Cousins, have been searching for their quote-unquote Prince Charming at quarterback. And it just seems like, you know, it keeps coming back to Taylor Heinicke. Is the search that the Commanders have going, I mean, do they really, is Heinicke their guy and they just don't realize it? Or is there still room to upgrade it? Or how do you kind of see that playing out? Because obviously they traded for Carson Wentz. That hasn't really worked out. They've tried some other guys, I think, along the way, and that hasn't worked out. It keeps coming back to Heinicke.
Yeah.
Are they chasing a rainbow here?
You know, I honestly think that I feel like last year, everybody from the media, the fans were just beating down on Washington saying, you have to get a quarterback if you want to do anything in this league. And for what it's worth, they did the best with what they could. Obviously, they knew the big names weren't going to Washington. Rodgers, Stafford, Wilson. No, they weren't going. Watson. And so Carson Wentz was the best that was available at the time. I was kind of on the other side of saying, hey, use this money to build the team. You need better quarterback play. That's what most teams need, is a better quarterback play. Eventually, yeah, you'll get a guy who's, you know, maybe 6'5", got a rocket cannon arm, but if he makes bad decisions with the football, it doesn't matter. I don't care what he looks like. I want to win. So right now you got a guy that's winning. He motivates this team. He moves this team. Yes, I need him to be better with the football, but where you're sitting now, I'd rather roll with him and then add pieces in other spots and try to uplift the team that way. And then at that point, you can say, hey, we really do. This is the only position that's left that needs to be improved. So you kind of got to pick your battles. I would have went the other route, try to build the team around, not necessarily around Taylor, but uplift the other pieces to make it easier on him, because he plays a lot better whenever the running game is working really well, and he doesn't have to throw it that often. And you can win a lot. I mean, I always reference rookie year Ben Roethlisberger, right? Super Bowl Ben Roethlisberger. I think he threw the ball like 14 times. And he would have some ugly numbers, but he got him a ring. And I think you can have that same type of success with Taylor Heinicke. And yeah, it's not sexy, but hey, you know, winning cures all.
Yes, it does. And speaking of a winning combination, Terry McLaurin seems to have, it doesn't matter who he's playing with. There's just something special about Terry McLaurin. Having played the receiver position, what is that it factor that Terry seems to have that, you know, that Washington hasn't really had historically, or recently, I should say? Their receivers have been, you know, kind of, yeah, I don't want to say jags, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Terry McLaurin is special.
Haven't heard that term, jag, just a guy. I feel
just
that.
A guy, yeah.
I feel that. Yeah, it's Terry is special. He's a guy that's definitely underrated. He's undervalued, I feel. Yes, he just got paid, and they've started to rank him in top 10 in some lists. But I think what makes him so special is that he's almost the anti-receiver. He's not the diva. He doesn't ask for a lot of attention. He's not going to upstage his quarterback. He's just the ultimate, consummate professional and a team player. It amazed me how in the beginning of the year, first 6-7 games, he would go throughout the entire game, have one, maybe two targets, and then make a huge catch at the end of the game. That's very difficult for a lot of people to do, because, I mean, for receivers, hey, we want to catch the ball early and often. We want to get involved so we can have a little swag going. And Terry is like, I'm fine. I'll keep doing what I can do. And then when the ball comes my way, I'll make that play. And now with Taylor, Taylor's giving him the ball early and often. They're saying, hey, go eat, go do your thing. But Terry is he's a great teammate. He's a great professional. He goes out there and works hard. He does everything the right way. I mean, shoot, I would want my three boys to grow up and be like Terry McLaurin. He's just an all-around good guy, and he works at his craft.
This episode of the Locked On Giants podcast is brought to you in part by Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget across the US, UK, Canada, and coming soon to Australia. Whether you're looking for a luxury car for a special event or something to get you from point A to point B, or maybe you want to test drive a particular model before you invest, Turo's wide selection can deliver. And speaking of delivering, many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. So check out Turo.com today. Terms and conditions and exclusions apply. Forget the boring car rentals. Find your drive at Turo, that's T-U-R-O.com today. This episode of the Locked On Giants podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible is releasing a slate of new football podcasts that we're sure you're going to love. That's why you'll be able to find Block Forever available as a bonus episode on the Locked On NFL podcast right now. Block Forever is a brand new podcast from former NFL All-Pro Ryan Khalil, who takes the conversation about football to the next level. Khalil sits down with star players, coaches, and former pros across the league to get real about what happens on the field and behind the scenes. New episodes of Block Forever will be recorded and released every Thursday, ahead of Thursday night football. After you finish with the Locked On Giants podcast, head on over to Locked On NFL to get a sneak peek of Locked Forever or catch the full series available anywhere you get your podcasts. Available everywhere now and for free. Audible, get in the game. Let's talk about the defense. This weekend, there is a report that Chase Young will be back. What can the Giants expect as far as, you know, where Chase is going to line up, how much his workload is going to look like, and just overall what he looks like? You know, I don't know if you've seen him practice or anything like that, but how's he looking, and what can the Giants expect as far as his deployment and the workload?
You know, that I think it's still up in the air. I mean, there were talks about him potentially coming back against Atlanta, but then it was rain and they pulled him for an illness. I kind of feel like, hey, there's no need to throw your shiny new Ferrari, just got new tires, onto some wet grass. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. And then now you're going up to New York, you're going to go play on turf. And now you have to decide, do you really want to put him out there on that? So in my opinion, if he plays in this game, I don't think it needs to be, you know, all the time. I don't think it has to be 50, 60 plays. I would rather him kind of work his way in there, maybe in passing situations, because, I mean, shoot, you got a good running game. And whenever you have a good running attack, there's going to be a lot of people that are running right at Chase Young. They're going to challenge him. They're going to see how confident he is in his knee. Is he able to take on blocks? Is he going to shy away from cut blocks, things of that nature? And if he shows that, people are going to put a big red dot on him. And they're going to run the ball right at 99. Now, if you say, hey, you know what, let's give Chase a little break. Maybe he doesn't play this week. Maybe he only plays on third downs, big passing situations. That gives you a little bit more flexibility. So in my eyes, I don't think you see a whole lot of them. I think that this game kind of matches up well where Washington can play against New York and at least get this week and then have that bye week and then bring him back for that second matchup. That would be my play.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if it makes more sense, given, like you said, the fact that they are playing on that turf, that they do have the bye week, you know, then they the following week they're playing back at home on grass. Does it make sense to hold Chase another week?
I would hold him. I would hold him.
I would too, probably.
I think playoff wise, if you think playoff wise, I don't know the math and the numbers, but I would like to think that a split between these two teams, I don't think either one necessarily loses their playoff chances. I think that you would still have a chance to make it in the postseason, but then you don't have to worry about any just oddball stuff. I would feel so much more comfortable knowing that we're past the turf, where we got an extra week of work, where, you know, you had a great week of work, we can get you recovered, and then now you're fresh. We've known that you've been good for 2 and 3 weeks. Now we know you're just perfect. You're going to play reaction free. Just going to just knock it out of the park.
Yes, let's talk about what I think is one of the key matchups of this game. You can disagree, and that's fine. Yes, but I think that Giants running game against that Washington run defense is going to be a key game. Now, I don't know what the weather is. I haven't looked that far ahead. I don't know
what's going to be. What's it going to be? 48 degrees and sunny.
No rain?
No rain was in the forecast.
Okay, so it's going to be dry.
So if it's nice and clean, that's good.
Okay, so that being said, the Giants running game has struggled the last, I want to say, basically going back to Seattle. Seattle seems to have figured out how to slow them down. They ran well against the Texans, who have a kind of, I think, the league's worst run defense, or one of the worst run defenses. Then Detroit and Dallas figured out how to stuff the running game. That being said, you've got Washington, who I think is ranked 8th against the run. And you've got the Giants, who's, despite the struggles, they're still up there in the top half of the league again, if they're a rushing game. Talk about that battle, where you see the key for both sides, and who's going to win that battle.
Yeah, that is the battle. That was my number one key. You have to control Saquon Barkley and that running game. New York, you guys are 6-0 when you run for over 100 yards. You're 1-3 when you run for under 100 yards. Okay, so right there, you said it perfectly, Patricia. You run for 100 yards, you're going to probably win that game. And I think the way that Washington is playing as of late, yes, last week they got ran over, but I think Atlanta's running over a lot of people now. So it is something that's susceptible. I think in the back of Washington's mind, like, hey, man, we really got to hunker down on this run. But there's two rookies on that offensive line for New York that have that are going to have some battles on them. Evan Neal, really good rookie out of Alabama. And then what's the young man's name? Oh, I honestly, I can tell you. His name is Josh Izudu.
Oh, Izudu.
No, okay. Izudu? Yeah, he's a rookie as well, left guard. So last week, Deron Payne, John Allen, they had a hell of a day against Kenyon Green, the rookie from the Texans. So I'm sure they're licking their chops and they're pointing out, hey, we got a rookie at left guard here. So left guard and right tackle are going to be some key spots to pay attention to. I think that the defensive line can hold up, but I wonder what they're going to do with Daniel Jones. How much of design quarterback runs are they going to see? Mariota had a pretty good game, close to 50 yards, about 51 yards rushing on 7 carries against Washington last week. I would expect to see some more of that this week with Daniel Jones.
Well, I hate to break this to you, but they might not have Izudu in the lineup. He's dealing with a neck injury. They might have Nick Gates there at left guard.
Okay, that's fine.
But that being said, Evan Neal should be back. And Neal would draw, and okay, now I'm drawing a blank. You have Chase is usually a starter. And who's the
Montez Sweat on
Montez
side.
Sweat, yes.
Yeah.
And basically that defensive front of Washington, they are a handful to handle. So I mean, you look at the matchups there, you think the strength of the matchup against the Giants offensive line is going to be in the interior, or is it going to be on the edges, or maybe right across the board? Who knows?
You know, I think the strength is on the interior, but like you said, the entire unit is playing really, really well. One thing that New York was doing against Dallas early on, against another really good defensive line, is that it was a lot of play action, get Daniel Jones out on the edge. I would expect to see some of that as well. I mean, you're giving up 33 sacks this year in New York, so it's not, you know, be the best plan to just try to stand back there like a statue. They're going to move Daniel Jones around and try to take advantage of this aggressive pass rush. I mean, shoot, you're giving up 5 sacks 3 times this year. You hadn't had a game without a sack, so some sacks will happen. It's just, to me, is ultimately controlling Saquon and making Daniel Jones do it. If you can make Daniel Jones beat you, you know, hey, I'm willing to take that bet. Sorry, New York fans. I would rather get beat by Daniel Jones than have to get beat by Saquon Barkley.
A lot of people, I think, have said that, so you're not alone there. What's the X factor that no one's really talking about just yet, but is kind of looming as the important thing, besides obviously the Giants run versus Washington's run and vice versa for that matter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you do flip it the other way. Washington has to be feeling good about their running attack going against going against New York, because New York gives up a lot of yards on the ground too. 169 last week, 160 the week before against Detroit, and 100 against the Texans. So that's got to be a big point. Like you said, control the ball. You got to control the time of possession, keep running that clock. But the thing for me is that I feel like there's going to have to be some big plays. The team who makes the most big plays, most splash plays, are going to end up winning this thing. New York, you didn't throw the ball very deep that often, but when you do, Darius Slayton is going to do a really good job of coming down with it. He's a big play receiver for New York. But on the flip side, I need Taylor Heinicke to take care of the football. If he can make a big play or two down the field, that would be great. Getting the ball in the end zone would be great. Holding Graham Gano to field goal would be great. So the X factor is just taking care of that football for Taylor Heinicke. I feel like a lot of the check boxes are in Washington's favor. A lot of the check boxes, in my opinion, are in Washington's favor, but the little wild card is ball security. Ball security. As a matter of fact, ball security. 13 forced fumbles by the Giants this year. That's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. I mean, they're not getting a lot of interceptions, but the forced fumbles are there. Who are some of the players on Washington that I guess Washington fans will know about, Washington media will know about, but guys who kind of can sneak up on a team? And how do you see these guys kind of playing into the potential game plan? And they, you know, give me a couple on each side of the ball.
Oh, yeah, let's start on defense since we were just there. There's so many more names past that defensive line. One guy that you got to pay attention to who's been playing tremendous, especially with Cole Holcomb out, is Jamin Davis. He's been flying around the football field. He's so athletic. He's able to stay with running backs. He can catch those agile quarterbacks. He's wearing 52 for Washington, so you'll see him in the middle. Another guy to pay attention to, number 31, Cam Curl. ever since he's been back on the field. This is another one of those guys that has been getting healthy. He's been handling all the play calls for defense. He wears the green dot. He gets people lined up. And it's allowed for some flexibility in that secondary. It's allowed for a young player by the name of Derek Forrest to get out on the field. They call him Defo down there in Washington. And he just gets his hands on the football. That guy's a good football player. For whatever reason, since Cam Curl's been back, that whole unit, the secondary, the defense have been playing out of their mind. And those are a few of the guys that are you know, really big contributors to it. One guy I want to see if he's going to be back this week is Benjamin St. Juste, second-year corner, tall, long, rangy guy. I would definitely like to see him get back in the game. I think it was a hole against Atlanta last week, so excited to see him get back on the field. And we flip over to that offensive side. A couple of matchups. Number one, Logan Thomas against Kayvon Thibodeau. There were a few times that Thibodeau was lined up over the tight end. And the guy tried to block him one time by himself. Didn't end up well. Dak Prescott got hit. So I could see that, you know, the tight end position, number one, having to block Kayvon Thibodeau is going to be a pretty big matchup. But Kayvon goes in coverage a little bit too. So I'm interested to see how he's handling being out in coverage and see if that's something that the offense tried to pay attention to. And then back on offense, another player, I'm looking at Jahan Dotson. He's working his way back into the offense. You know, he had a lot of early action before he pulled his hamstring, and now he's finding his way back in there, trying to see is he going to be a guy that gets some more targets now, you know, since he's back healthy, and how is the ball going to get spread around? It should see how the defense is going to play against that Washington offense.
This episode of the Locked On Giants podcast is brought to you in part by LinkedIn Jobs. Small business owners, if you're looking for the right people to help your small business fire on all cylinders, check out LinkedIn Jobs. Post a free job listing in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach the world's largest professional network of over 810 million people. Then add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to let everybody know you're hiring. Over 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn Jobs every week, and are just waiting to find opportunities with employers like your business. With LinkedIn Jobs, simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so that you could quickly prioritize whom you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rank LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. Post your job for free right now at linkedin.com/LockedOnNFL. That's linkedin.com/LockedOnNFL to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Hey, Giant fans, thanks so much for making the Locked On Giants podcast your first listen today. For your second listen today, check out Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter the most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with local experts and insights only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Anthony, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you a little bit about the NFL receiver position. Having played it, I want to pick your brain on a few things, maybe a few misconceptions people have. And these kind of pertain to the Giants. You know, Giant fans say the receivers aren't getting open. They're not separating. What exactly constitutes good separation? I mean, is it a yard? Is it 2 yards? What exactly does a receiver, an NFL receiver, need for people to say that guy can separate on a consistent basis?
That is an awesome question, because I remember getting to the league and they were explaining separation. Basically, separation in the NFL is the receiver being in between the DB and the football. That is it. You're going to have an inch of separation, and that's a win. You have to find a way to catch the ball, extend your arms, and catch the thing. You saw the way Dallas was plucking the ball against the New York DBs. That's technically a win in this league. It's in college where you have a yard of separation. High school, you get 3-5 yards of separation. It didn't happen that much in the NFL. Do you want that to happen? Yeah. But on the flip side, the quarterback has to make throws. Quarterback can still put the ball in a position that takes advantage of the little bit of separation that you can create. I mean, these are elite athletes on both sides of it. So, no, you're not going to see every receiver running wide open. And some of it is play call. Some of it is, you know, scheme and that and the like. But all in all, if your receiver is in between the ball from that DB, in between the DB and the football, that's good separation.
Now, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you'd rather take your chances with Daniel Jones beating the Commanders as opposed to Saquon. I don't know how much film study you've done on Daniel, but based on what you have seen and what you know of him, is he really looking that much better? Is he benefiting from the scheme? Is he still making, you know, boneheaded decisions? Is he, you know, what are you seeing from him as far as improvement? Because no player, I think, on this team currently has the fan base as split as Daniel Jones, whether they, you know, people want him back or don't want him back. What do you see from him?
You know, I would be up here lying if I said I've watched all the tape on Daniel Jones. All right. I'll say coming into the season, I've always been like, you know, he hadn't really done a lot. But the start of the year, you're like, whoa, what's been going on with Daniel Jones? And I think a lot of that is the Brian Daboll effect. I think he's been able, and Mike Kafka, got to give some love to your offensive coordinator as well. Those two guys are that season. They've been the lead. Kafka's played it. Now he's coaching it. So I think that type of brain trust around him has been helpful. Going back to the Dallas game, you know, I'd like to see recent history of how a quarterback is playing. They really don't ask him to do a lot, at least in that game. They didn't ask him to do a lot early. A lot of play action, dump it off short. He threw the ball deep twice. You know, so at this point, to me, it's leaning on the run game and then allowing your quarterback to make it easy on your quarterback. So if you roll out, you're essentially cutting the field, right? If you roll out to one side, you're saying, okay, hey, you're looking at number one, number two, and your third option. Early on in the year, Daniel was making some great decisions. He was like, I'm taking off with the football. He was very decisive with that. I thought that was really good. I saw some growth in that and just those decision making. Sometimes running is the best play. You know, taking a sack is not a problem. It's whenever you make bonehead throws, you just throw it up. That's not good. So statistically, he's playing better football. Is it, you know, MVP level? No, probably not. You know, he probably has some work to go, but it also doesn't help that you don't have a full stable of receivers. So I know a guy. I played a little flag football on Sunday. I'm a little sore, but I'm not available this week.
Too bad, right?
Yeah, can't play.
I mean, basically, Daniel is kind of like, I guess, Taylor Heineke. He's a guy you can win with, but, you know, is he a guy that necessarily going to elevate the talent around him the way Eli Manning did, the way, you know, a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen or Joe Burrow is able to do? I don't think Daniel is there yet. I mean, do you agree?
I would agree with that. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think every team needs to have that one guy that can just lift everybody up. As we said before, there are some really good teams and great teams in this league that, and historically, that have had okay quarterbacks. I mean, you know, we say what it is. Trent Dilfer won the Super Bowl, right? We talked about that offline. Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. Nobody would beat. He was a great quarterback. You know, no offense or anything, but he won a Super Bowl behind a really good defense. He took care of the football. They ran the ball, and it was a good recipe.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, final thing I want to ask you about is Kenny Golladay. We keep hearing again in New York, people say Kenny Golladay's not a fit for what the Giants are doing. Golladay has a specific skill set, obviously. He's been known for the jump ball. But when you say a receiver is not a fit, I mean, to me, the receiver has to block, has to run, catch the ball. You know, I mean, am I oversimplifying what constitutes a fit for a receiver in an offense, or is there more to it? And is Kenny Golladay a fit for what the Giants are doing?
Yeah, I do think you're slightly oversimplifying, and I think we all kind of do that, and especially, you know, video games. I play video games, love Madden, but I'm like, everything isn't about just switching out a player. So Kenny had a lot of success in Detroit, big receiver, get downfield, throw it up, let him catch it, this deep ball guy. That's been what he's been best at. They haven't been doing that much with him here, and it may be a little, you know, inefficiency with the quarterback, miscommunication, something's not hitting. I mean, I was surprised to look at the stats. I was like, you got 10 targets on the year and 4 catches. That's not good. It's week 13. Like, come on.
Well, he also was injured too.
He was injured. So I'm sorry.
You're right. The targets.
But it's still very low, and it's kind of surprising to me. Fit-wise, I mean, shoot, you got to see what's going on in the building. There are certain things where, you know, some offenses, you know, the Patriots, for example, old school Patriots, a lot of, you know, crossers and, you know, shifty receivers. Kenny wouldn't have been running that type of a thing, right? So is he a fit? Yeah, like I said, I ain't been watching enough tape. Something's not going right up there. I don't know what it is, but I think he could still play. I think he brings some value to a team. He's got to figure out where to put him. Frankly, I was surprised he moved Kadarius Toney before he moved Galladay. But hey, that's neither here nor there.
Can Odell help this team?
I think he can. I just don't think he will go back to New York, especially when he has Dallas on the table. Mm. I kind of feel like, unless you add Odell, but I don't know what else you're going to get out of the team. Like we've spoken about, is Daniel going to take you that much higher? I don't know what you do. If you get late in the season and a team says, you know what, we can shut down Saquon Barkley or control him and make Daniel Jones beat us, I don't know if he's going to be able to do that over these final five games. He's going to get tested. I mean, that Philly defense is tough. That's a tough defense, and they were good against the run. So it's going to be, you know, a situation where he's going to have to throw the ball. Having Odell would help because it's going to take some pressure off of Slayton. It's going to take some pressure off of that running game. But if Odell wants to get to a Super Bowl, I think he needs to try to go to Dallas rather than go to New York.
Plus, I don't know how the Giants would fit him under the cap. But that's a whole nother topic.
I don't even mess with the dollar stuff.
I just, you know, short of redoing Kenny Galladay's contract, I don't know where they're going to find the money unless, you know, we take up a collection or something.
GoFundMe?
Right. Yeah, GoFundMe. There you go. All right. Final question, and I'll let you go. Give me your prediction for Sunday.
Ooh, this is a good one. So you got two pretty even teams, and frankly, New York plays a lot of one-score games. I think this ends up being another one of those one-score games. It's going to be a little bit too close for my liking. I'm going to give it to Washington, though. I do think that they have the edge here. It's going to be probably like a 24-17, 24-21, something close. Keep us on our edge all Sunday.
All right, fair enough. That's why you line up and you play the game, as they say.
That's
given
what
Sunday and all that
well, what
stuff.
You, well, tell me yours, then. Tell me your prediction.
I think it's going to be a close one. The Giants are getting back some guys who are healthy. If the guys that I hope come back actually do, Bellinger, Neal, Bredesen, if they get Nick Gates in there, I think the running game can get started up again. I'm going to say Giants 23, Washington 17.
I'm
calling
score.
It close.
Okay, I like that.
Giants need to split with Washington because if they lose both of them, they lose the tiebreaker now. And Washington's making a push.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
everybody counted them out as dead at the start of the season. They're still alive. And that win against the Eagles was huge, I think, for their confidence. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they've been on this roll, six of the last seven. And like you said at the beginning, winning cures a lot of things.
It definitely does. Definitely. It'll be a good one on Sunday. It'll be a
yes,
good
it will. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, Anthony, listen, I appreciate the time that we spent together. Great stuff. He is Anthony Armstrong, former NFL receiver, host of the Believe in Commanders podcast. Make sure you check him out. The information will be in the show notes if you want to listen or follow Anthony on Twitter or social media. For Anthony Armstrong, I'm Patricia Trainoff. Giant fans, thank you so much for tuning into the Locked On Giants podcast. We will see you tomorrow.